Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to another live Cinematic Universe news minisode. And just to emphasise the live nature of it, literally just as I was about to hit the go live button, James noted that he couldn't hear me. So I'm hoping, assuming that those of you watching can indeed hear me and that it was a problem with James' headphones rather than my microphone, but we'll see how we
get. Yeah, probably.
I mean, he can hear me now. So welcome. Thanks for tuning in if you're watching live. And if you're also, thanks for downloading if you're listening to the podcast, or indeed if you're watching on YouTube afterwards. So many different ways to watch these now. We haven't done a news episode since, I think it was around the middle of May we last caught up on news. So there have been a few things that have happened. We're going to do our
usual upwards of two things.
Run through upwards of two things. No, there are some things. There are some trailers. There's one comics adjacent thing that I'm going to give us the excuse to talk about. So, but we have some quite major comic book superhero news that is unavoidable to talk about. That we'll have to get out of the way first. So we'll get on with that. Hello to everyone on YouTube who's already left comments saying they're listening. Hello, Terrence, Neil, Andy, Michael, Pete, Nick, Stephen, and Terrence again. Sorry, that was just because he popped up again at the end and I'd already said his name and I was on a roll. Let's crack on then with our first story, shall we? And don't forget, as ever, by the way, if you are on the comments, feel free to chuck in your comments with on these stories as we go along. And I'm sure everyone will have something to say about hashtag release. It's coming to HBO Max in 2021. That thing that we all said didn't exist, that is now being made to exist. And apparently, according to some people on the internet, this is proof that it already existed. Creating something is proof that it existed previously and that they were right all along.
Yeah, the fact that a Snyder Cut is about to come out does not mean that it always existed.
No.
It means that it may exist shortly. The fact that they're releasing it like next year or something.
They're spending $30 million or so on producing it. Now, to be fair, where I'll hold my hands up is I was always operating on the assumption that so little had been shot that you know, that it wouldn't be possible to put out all of the stuff that they're talking about. You know, I didn't understand or believe that there was any kind of footage of, for example, Darkseid or things like that. So this idea that there was this mythical version of the film where all that the Joss Whedon version had done had been to cut out a load of stuff that had been shot and then add a load of new stuff. I think it seems like the reality is somewhere in between. There does exist material that hasn't been used. But a lot will need to be done in terms of effects work and, from the sound of it, ADR with the actors and things like that. Whether they're going to have another go at the moustache or not, I don't know. But yeah, so I mean, the long and short of it is, and if you've somehow missed this news, because I realized we had, you know, barely actually said the words since we started, but as it's now being called, Zack Snyder's Justice League is going to be released on HBO Max in 2021. I do like that in the marketing, you know, Warner's haven't called it the Snyder Cut. And again, because it isn't the Snyder Cut, it is a new thing that is being created. I've kind of got mixed feelings on this as an actual, you know, in terms of my reaction to this happening. It's actually not completely negative, but other than a big sigh, what was your reaction, James, when this was announced?
In fairness, just as a film nerd and as a superhero nerd, the opportunity to see different filmmakers' alternate cut of the Justice League movie, I mean, that doesn't seem like such a bad thing. Like, if nothing else, it will be academically interesting.
Yeah.
Because we'll have the Whedon version to compare it to, and we can say, like, you know, this is perhaps closer to where it was going. This is what happens if you swap a film's director sort of mid process. You know, it won't be the cut that would have been in cinemas, but it will be a cut by the original director, and I find that interesting in itself.
Yeah,
I would be more interested if it wasn't Zack Snyder and Justice League.
Yeah,
but I mean, you can't have it all.
You only have to look at something like, you know, the Donner cut, the Richard Donner cut of Superman is academically interesting. Right. It's in some ways it is artistically a failure, and it's partly because, you know, in some instances they don't have the right footage to use. In other instances, it's because it has to fudge the narrative and it doesn't work as a sequel to Superman 1 when it has the same ending as Superman 1. But it is interesting as a thing. It's, you know, it's not the version that we would have had if Richard Donner had stayed on. But it is interesting to see material that we hadn't seen and scenes in a different order and more of Gene Hackman and all of that kind of stuff. And this is the same. I mean, you know, Justice League is, you know, artistically, it is a failure of a film, but it's a fascinating failure. And seeing more of an alternate version only adds to the interesting nature of being able to pick apart why the whole thing failed. Because I'm going to assume, and I know this is partly like, everyone knows I'm not a Zack Snyder fan, as if that's a massive surprise, but I don't expect this version to be better, or at least not significantly better than the Joss Whedon version. I think we're going to end up, and actually I will just flag up a comment here from Stephen. Is this going to be like the two Exorcist prequels where both versions are terrible? Yeah, I think it's very likely that both versions are terrible, but the existence of both versions inherently makes the story more interesting than if they didn't exist. So in that sense, as you say, from the film nerd sense, it's purely interesting. Even from the DC nerd sense, and I mean, you know, I'm not an online DC movies fanboy, but I am a DC comics reader, and I'm interested in the prospect of seeing things, and by things I do largely mean Darkseid, brought to the screen that we haven't seen brought to the screen before. Yeah, unfortunately, definitely. It is, you know, and again, I think it's really interesting that Warner's, you know, while obviously he himself has, Warner's haven't used the phrase Snyder Cut in the marketing, because the toxicity around that and around the campaign is, you know, more so than this thing. If you didn't have the toxicity of the campaign and it was just, it's Zack Snyder's version, I wouldn't be excited for Zack Snyder's film because I'm not a fan of his, but I would get that for a lot of people that was exciting and it's a cool thing to see happen. It's because of the way people have been over the last couple of years about it. And it is, and as much as you know, so, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who've talked about wanting to see it in a completely, you know, kind of not innocence, not the right word, but, you know, in a sincere way and in a way that hasn't involved like harassment of people on the internet. So I'm not tarring every single DCEU fan with this brush in the slightest, but there is undoubtedly an element of that online campaign who have done nothing short of whine and gripe and be deeply unpleasant for the last couple of years. You know, and it feels like they've ground it down and have won in that sense. Now, I mean, again, it's like from Warner's point of view, if they see this as a commercially viable thing, if they're going to think they're going to make more than $30 million by doing it, you know, they've obviously I don't blame them for responding to that. You know, Neil comments here as well, it feels like the baddies have won. It's like, and it does to an extent. And because, again, like, I don't think Zack Snyder himself has come across as particularly, again, what's the word? Sort of, he's just not been very magnanimous about this.
Magnanimous is the word I was going to say, yeah.
And again, I can understand him feeling, like, upset about how the film came out, and I can totally understand him not wanting to watch the version that came out. Equally, you know,
I also don't want to watch the version that came out.
Well, but you know, he stepped off the film for, you know, entirely valid and understandable reasons, and I have, you know, I have every sympathy
quickly,
yeah,
in fairness, do you think he stepped off entirely voluntarily, or was that a partially true situation where Warner basically went, we don't want your version of the film. We think you fucked it up. Here is a way you can gracefully leave.
If that's the case, then actually
it seems like to me.
If that's the case, I'm more inclined to think he doesn't need to be magnanimous about it, to be honest. If the official story is true, which is, you know, that he stepped off to deal with, you know, an absolutely awful family tragedy, you know, I don't think anyone in that situation can be blamed for what happened. He can't be blamed for stepping off. Warner's can't be blamed for completing the film. You know, he might have issues with how they chose to complete it, but at the end of the day, you know, they're left to make a film how they want to make it. So in that sense, you know, I think the decent thing to do would be to say, you know, I respect what was done with it, even if it's not what I would have done, but here's your chance to see what I would have done. But I do feel like he has very heavily stoked the us versus them, this, and made this into kind of a war where it doesn't need to be one. And I would much rather be sitting here, you know, getting excited in all the ways that we talked about, as this is interesting. This is something that we haven't seen in this era of comic book and superhero movies before. We haven't seen this happen. We're seeing it happen in real time. So yeah, that's kind of why we're uneasy. That's why it, you know, the reaction to the news is a big groan and a sigh, and it's just, you know, yeah, social media in the kind of immediate aftermath of it. I mean, admittedly, you know, not kind of people who like we would tend to follow, but just the kind of the overwhelming. I mean, to be fair, since then I haven't seen a huge amount of crowing from the people who've won, so maybe they'll just gracefully get their release of it, and you know,
yeah.
And the other thing is as well, I mean, it's kind of it's critic proof. There is no, it's going to be impossible to objectively state your opinion on it, because everyone's already decided what they think of it, and no one is going to have their view changed.
I'm looking forward to the Zack Snyder fans who have been asking for this film and then don't like it when it comes out.
They won't exist. There is nobody.
There will be some.
I don't think there will, because I think so much of these fandoms are about kind of sinking your entire identity into something, you know? These are people who think Jared Leto's Joker was good. Like, these are people who now, because that's been the other hilarious thing of this, is like David Ayer popping up his head going, oh, yeah, Hello, remember me? And it's like, just as, you know, we've had, again, sort of, and I think he obviously feels slighted by what's happened with James Gunn being given Suicide Squad and Cathy Yan being given Birds of Prey. And, you know, obviously we don't know what James Gunn's Suicide Squad is going to be like, but certainly for me, and I think a lot of people, Birds of Prey ended up being far more what we wanted to see out of a movie with Harley Quinn in it, and a movie with a lot of those characters. So just the fact, but it's just like, I know that he will have his fans, but I think, you know, the people who want to see a different version of Suicide Squad are not fans of David Ayer, who want to see a, like, kind of his vision. They are fans of Jared Leto, who want to see more of Jared Leto as the Joker. That's literally all they're talking about. And that's the only way in which he's going to get a swell of support for an alternate cut of Suicide Squad. But it's like, I know it was, you know, he says it was kind of chopped and edited kind of without him, but it's not the same situation as what happened with Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon. It is still fundamentally a film with his name on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, wait and see how Justice League does.
Yeah.
If it ends up being
a license to print money, then they'll go back and do it for whatever.
Zack Snyder's Justice League does that well. You know, we'll see. I mean, like I say, for purely academic reasons, I would be interested in seeing a recut of any bad movie, but Suicide Squad included.
I don't think there's a way. I mean, you can't do a recut of Suicide Squad that completely replaces the villain. You know, I think Suicide Squad has, I think there are ways that you can improve Suicide
Squad. Yeah, you could do a version of Suicide Squad that made sense.
Yeah, but you can't, you fundamentally can't fix the biggest problems with Suicide Squad, I don't think.
Yeah.
Nick Various Things asks, would you be more interested in seeing the assembly cut of Justice League as it was at the point when Snyder left, or this completed version?
So assembly cuts always interest me because I like knowing about the process of making a film and like what gets left out. Mm. Like whenever anyone says like, oh, you know, we shot 5 hours of footage for this movie, I'm always like, yeah, but what was that footage? What were the bits you decided to leave? What did you decide to keep? Like figuring out how a film organically grows out of all that material you've got is really cool. Like I would love to see that. Equally, if they're going to do a new version of the film and say, well, this is the director's vision, or this is how the director would have completed it or has completed it now. Like I'm happy with that. I don't think either version is easier to say, like, I would rather see that.
Mm. Yeah, I think
I would happily see either and ideally both. But
Yeah, and this is the frustrating thing. We can't sit here as people who, you know, thought Justice League was a bad movie. And by the way, I just want to say again for the record, Batman v Superman, I know for a fact that I like Batman v Superman more than a quite significant number of people. Like I'm in like the, you know, the top 50, but I reckon I like Batman v Superman more than maybe about 30% of people. I find Batman v Superman a far more interesting failure than I do. I think the problem with Justice League was that it just wasn't interesting enough as a failure the way that Batman v Superman
was. I actually did rewatch Justice League a couple of weeks ago. Just I stuck it on in the background while I was doing
it. After you said you wouldn't do it for a watch along.
Nah, watch along is different.
No, it's different.
just because it was on Netflix. And there were bits where I was like, this is so Joss Whedon-y, but also I quite like it.
Mm. I
did skip the entire final act. I was like, yeah, not interested.
I mean, I think that final act does a lot to, I mean, apart from like a couple of like, you know, Superman based moments for me, it's like, yeah, it's, I think that probably colors a lot. And I think as well, there's so much going on in like the first half of the film that particularly when you watch it again, you know, is not going to get paid off. You know, it's like you could cut Cyborg out of the movie entirely and like wouldn't have that much effect on it, but that's not to say there isn't good stuff in it, and there is, it's not to say that some of that stuff doesn't come from Snyder either, but the point is, yeah, you know, even as people who are, you know, not fans of that movie, not fans of Zack Snyder generally, we can't sit here and be all kind of snobby and above it and say we're not going to watch it when this is out. Now there is the question, and Louis asked us this as well, will it be viewable in the UK? No idea, because I don't know. I mean, they'll find a way to get it
eventually.
Out.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, I mean, we haven't got DC Universe, we haven't got HBO Max, but they will find a way to get that released in the UK, even if it's not on a digital platform. They'll sell a flipping Blu-ray. I would bet
it comes out on like Amazon or Sky Atlantic or something.
Yeah,
you know?
There'll be a way to see it, and we will watch it and we will cover it because it will be interesting. And you know, and again, this always sounds like a bit of a sop when I say it, but I will always say that I would like nothing more than to be surprised and to like something. Like I don't go in wanting, even if I go in expecting to hate something, I don't go in wanting to hate. And those times when actually something does quite surprise you, I think are often really good. I don't really think this will do that, but I think there'll be stuff to talk about, you know.
I'm interested in is seeing more of Ezra Miller as Flash,
because
he was great. So any additional footage of that, I'm looking forward to.
Any more footage of Aquaman going my man as well. Joe will be happy with that. Before we do move on from this, good, because a couple of people mentioned him. Michael says, you know, Cavill gets to play Superman one more time, and Andy asked the question of can they get the likes of Cavill and Affleck back for ADR. Weirdly, given the way that circumstances were left a couple of years ago, I think Cavill is more likely than Affleck nowadays, from the sound of it. You know, back after Justice League came out, Affleck was the one who was signed on for another film, and Cavill was the one who wasn't. Now Affleck is pretty much out of the picture, and I think in a more general sense, you know.
Well, something we've noted is that all of the actors seem pretty on board with Zack Snyder. Like, whatever you think about him as a filmmaker and whatever his public persona is like, his actors all seem to have been pretty loyal to him. So
A lot of them have posted about this on social media, you know, even before the release was announced, you know, kind of just when it was a concept. And there are reports / rumors / whatever you want to call them that Henry Cavill could actually be in negotiations to come back as Superman. He doesn't seem to consider that his time as Superman is over. Whether that is just doing a bit of ADR or whether that is appearing in a Shazam or a Black Adam future film or whatever, but it does seem to potentially be on the table that Henry Cavill could be back, which I've got no objection to. I like him as Superman. I'd like to see the character done a bit better, but I'm not unhappy with kind of him as Superman. So, it's it is a thing. It has been, again, as Andy says, # create the Snyder Cut. It is going to be created. It is, and I will not back down in that argument of everyone who was saying this is a thing that secretly exists and that's being kept, you know, that's been suppressed and kept down by Warners. They are not right. And I think, you know, I think those people who have sort of been quite critical of Warners for kind of, again, for that kind of alleged suppression of Snyder's version, the weight that they have thrown behind promoting this as Zack Snyder's in big letters Justice League. Now, again, if that's seeing the way the wind's blowing, then it's seeing the way the wind's blowing. But you can't accuse them of not throwing a lot of hype behind this. You know, before it's even been done, they've thrown a lot of hype behind it. So we'll wait and see. So that will come in 2021. I mean, you know, and anything that we talk about in terms of future news comes with, you know, the caveat of assuming that things don't get even worse than they currently are. But something again is hopefully coming along soon. I think still scheduled for August, or whether that's going to be an August theatrical release or whether it's going to come along later. The poster and teaser that came out today did say summer, kind of more vaguely. But we have been treated to the first teaser trailer for Bill and Ted Face the Music. And for those of you who don't see this as relevant to this podcast, I'm holding up my copy of the Evan Dorkin Bill and Ted comics that were originally published by Marvel, although this collection is published by Boom because Marvel long since gave up the rights, but in which Evan Dorkin did a fantastic adaptation of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and then a series of about 12 issues after that that pick up the story and follow on directly from the events of Bogus Journey, and they are fantastic. There have been other Bill and Ted comics as well in more recent years, I think done by either Boom or IDW, but that's how I'm counting Bill and Ted as comics adjacent. And also because I want an excuse to talk about Bill and Ted, because I am so unbelievably excited about Bill and Ted Face the Music. I've been waiting so long for this trailer. I was absolutely thrilled and a bit emotional by it. James is here to pour a big old bucket of piss water all over my face. So, James, tell us all what you thought of the Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer.
I don't know. I just thought it wasn't a very good trailer, and I sort of... seeing them all old and decrepit made me feel sad rather than
But we've seen pictures
happy.
Of them for ages, and also they don't look old and decrepit. They look a bit older, but, like, you know, Keanu Reeves is Keanu Reeves. His voice has gone a bit deeper. Alex Winter looks and sounds exactly the same as he did 25 plus
I don't
years
know about ago. Exactly the same. I don't know. I don't like Closer the than thing you is that I was pretty hyped for it, and then watching the trailer made me go a bit like, they just, you know, it's just reminded me how they have lost their youthful vigor, which, like, I get is sort of the point of the film, but I just think I'm, having seen Jane and Silent Bob Reboot, I'm not convinced that the film will be good enough to make me forget that the youthful versions of those characters are the definitive ones. That's what worries me.
I really don't think you can hold Kevin Smith responsible for Bill and Ted, really.
But it was so, it's the feeling of this trailer is so similar. It's like, hey, it's those cool guys you loved, but they're sort of old and slow now.
I don't know, it's baked into the premise of this, and, you know, obviously you might not see that as a positive thing, but, you know, this is the idea that they've had for the third Bill and Ted film, and they've had this idea for so long. You know, this has been the script that Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon have been trying to make for years and years. And the only reason that they haven't is because they've had to untangle the rights, because while they created it, they don't own the rights. MGM own the rights. So what they've had to spend about the last 10 years doing is persuading MGM that it's worth spending the money on. You know, they've had every... Dean Pariseau has been on board as director for about 8 years, you know. Winter and Reeves have always been on board. So I see this very much as a, you know, this isn't a sort of, oh, let's go and look, what can we dig up? You know, it doesn't look to me like a Dumb and Dumber 2 or that kind of thing, you know. It's the third film that they've always wanted to do. And that premise is, you know, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey ends on this note of they've done it, they've achieved what they were predicted to achieve. And then it's, yeah, but what if, you know, you've still got to do the work after that? And what if they never actually do that? And it's that thing of, you know, you're 20 years down the line and you knew you were supposed to do this thing 20 years ago. And all of a sudden you've blinked and those 20 years have passed and you haven't done it. And now what do you do? And I like that as a premise. I think it is a good way to do a film about an older version of Bill and Ted, rather than just it's 20 odd years later and they're still bobbing around in a phone booth having time travel-y adventures with their mates all the time. Obviously, what you don't see a lot of in the trailer, but that I think is going to be the real sort of selling point of the film, is Billy and Thea, their daughters. And I think this trailer is deliberately holding them back, because I think this trailer is about audience familiarity and Bill and Ted. But I think there's going to be quite a lot of the film that is about the daughters. And I think that's, again, it is another Jay and Silent Bob reboot comparison. I can see why you're thinking that. It's not a reason for me to say, oh, it's going to be totally different from Jay and Silent Bob reboot, because it's about their daughters. But nevertheless, like, I do think that's going to be a potentially interesting hook. I think the casting for those two, it looks great. I like the idea that from the look of it, Bill's daughter is a bit like Ted and Ted's daughter is a bit like Bill, you know, it's sort of...
which raises questions about their parentage.
No, I think it's just more, I like the idea that each one thinks that they're, you know, whether this is actually the case, but it seems to me like each one thinks that their own dad is lame, but that the other one's dad is quite cool. Like that's quite nice as a little, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with any of this. Like, it sounds like a good film and it sounds like a good idea. It's just... actually seeing the trailer made me go.
I think that's the thing. I think, you know, there's a difference between the attitude going in and then the reaction to the trailer as we came out of the trailer. And I just came out of the trailer going, great, that's got jokes in it that made me laugh. It looks right. The characters look right. The phone booth looks right. It's got death in it, which we did know, but it's still fantastic to see him. You know, again, as Michael points out, having the Orion logo at the start, that was a... You know, I think a lot of people got a shiver down the spine when the Orion logo popped up at the start. And yes, various things point out that Bill and Ted Day, which was the day they released the trailer and the poster, in American format is the 6th of the 9th. It's 69, dudes.
Nice.
Yeah. Sorry. Should be elbow coughing there. My reaction to the trailer was, I liked the joke of, as obvious a joke as it is, they're in the future talking to the people from the future again, and all they can think to say is the thing that got a brilliant reception last time they were there, and this time it gets completely blank looks because now they're looked upon as complete failures.
Perhaps it's because I haven't watched the films in a good 15-20 years. It didn't twig that they said exactly the same thing they said last time.
Yeah, they do. That's the point.
Yeah, I get it. Now you've said that. But when I was watching that scene, I was just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. it just gave me a warm, fuzzy feeling. I liked the joke about them playing to 40 people who were only there for $2 steak night or whatever it was. Especially seeing as the shot of the landscape, it appeared that they were playing in Sandy Shores in Grand Theft Auto 5.
I'm happy you're happy.
I'm glad that you're
and
happy.
And I will still see the film. my expectations are lowered by this trailer.
I'm interested to know if people in the comments want to... I mean, we'll probably have moved on from the discussion by the time they appear in my feed, but I'd like to know other people's reaction to this, because I thought it looked great. I mean, there were tons of like little Easter eggs and nods as well. There was... there's a scene where there's a load of guitars on the wall behind them, and you can see the guitars that they get given by Rufus at the end of Excellent Adventure. There's a scene where they're playing, which I would probably assume is from quite late in the film, and in the background appears to be, I mean, we know that Ted's dad is in the film, we know that Hal Landon is appearing, but it appears to be Ted's dad playing a clarinet or a cor anglais or something, some kind of instrument in the background. So I liked that as a little
yeah, bit. They've got Dante and Randall back, they've got Ben Affleck turning up for a cameo. Yeah, Alanis Morissette's gonna come have a wave at the end.
Okay, it could be Jay and Silent Bob reboot, but it could be Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Could it?
Without Will Ferrell. It did what I wanted the first kind of teaser slash trailer to do, which is to say to me, this is the new Bill and Ted film. This looks and feels and sounds and is Bill and Ted, and it did that. And Louis agrees with me, says really enjoyed it, more excited for the film now. So that's 2-1 to the pro Bill and Ted camp.
It's not a competition. I will remind you, I had exactly the same reaction to the Spider-Verse trailer, and I like the film.
There you go.
Doesn't make me wrong.
It does make you wrong.
It's not a question of right and wrong.
We're wrong.
I'm describing my genuine reactions.
I mean, it's funny because I think immediately in our WhatsApp groups, like the sort of the reactions, I seem to be the only person who was enthusiastically positive. And what it reminded me of was the reaction to the Sonic the Hedgehog trailers, and I was right about that. So
were you?
It's quite good. It's fine, and they're doing
quite.
Looks like, but there was another story came up because that's apparently moving on now. So I think this will be better than Sonic the Hedgehog, but you know, I'll be fine if it's on about the level of Sonic the Hedgehog. Let's go back / move on to something a little bit more comicsy.
That's a good pun.
I know. I'm actually going to read this one out for the people who are listening on the podcast. I was very pleased with this. Charlie's War. That is a good one. So this, where we had the trailer, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, but I think it's an interesting one to talk about. The trailer for The Old Guard, which is actually, you know, a 2020 comic book movie that is going to happen because it's coming out on Netflix, I think in July. So I think we'll have to do a Bloodshot and do a pod on it.
Yeah,
I think
seems
it's probably going to be better than Bloodshot. But it is the upcoming movie starring Charlize Theron, hence the Charlize War. And Charlize War is an old British war comic, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know. So
the best jokes are the ones you have to explain in punishing detail.
Yes. So it's Gina Prince-Bythewood's film, based on a comic by Greg Rucker and Leandro Fernandez. Leandro Fernandez, I think, best known for working on Punisher Max with Garth Ennis, and Greg Rucker, known for being Greg Rucker.
When did this come out?
So this came out, so the first series, so it's a series of miniseries. So the first block, the first volume, came out in 2017. Okay. The second volume actually just began at the end of 2019. I'm assuming that with comics being the way they are, it's on pause. I think it's only had a couple of issues come out, but Rucker has said that it's kind of planned to be a three volume thing, so kind of three arcs. They're only six issues.
This has just not been on my radar at all.
It had completely passed me by until I was asked to write about it. So I quickly went and I was like, oh, it's a Greg Rucker comic that I think I had vaguely heard of it, but
who published it?
It's Image, I think.
Image.
Let me just Google that. Let's look it up live. But I'm pretty sure, because most of Rucker's creator own stuff, I think it is Image. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's one of those where maybe because it was so short, I think it did just you know, it's definitely not had the level of recognition that some of his other stuff, you know, kind of a Stump Town, or even like I would have expected a Lazarus movie before this, maybe. Being a Greg Rucker comic, it is, of course, a comic featuring violence and soldiers, and fronted by a strong female character, because, you know, that's Greg Rucker's stock in trade. It's a really good little series, actually. The premise, and if you haven't watched the trailer, go and have a look at the trailer. The trailer sells the premise quite well. It is about effectively a team of mercenaries who you discover over the course of the premise being revealed are kind of functionally immortal. So they're sort of, they're soldiers, some of whom are like, they're kind of differing ages. Some of them are like many centuries old. Some of them are kind of a couple of hundred years old. And you get a new character introduced who basically, who's fighting in, he's an American soldier fighting in whatever war is going on at the time, who basically dies in inverted commas for the first time and basically discovers that she can't die and gets picked up by this team. They've tried to keep their existence secret for years. I mean, you know, their existence as a team of mercenaries isn't secret, but, you know, the fact that they're so old. So they're a sort of, they're like the world's best mercenaries. They get hired going around, you know, to sort of take part in wars and do missions, that kind of thing. But someone has discovered their existence and is basically trying to hunt them down in order to extract the secret of why they're immortal. They actually themselves, and this is a kind of, I don't think the trailer kind of explains this, but it's something you kind of find out in the series, they don't know why they can't die. And if you're kind of thinking, is a series about soldiers who can't die, is that not just quite boring because there's no real jeopardy? It's not that they can't die so much as they haven't died yet. So, like, they can die, and they've known people who are like them who have died. It's just that you never know when, you know, the next explosion or gunshot might actually. So it's not just, I'm going to go into this situation knowing that I'm invulnerable and immortal. It's like, I tend to get shot and blown up, and usually I come back when I do, but one time it might happen and I won't. So that's sort of, that's where there's a bit more of a kind of threat rather than just, oh, they can do anything. The lead character played by Charlize Theron is Andy, which is short for Andromache of Cydia, who, you know, is from hundreds and hundreds of years
Cydia.
Ago. Cydia, yeah. and is the oldest of them. So, yeah. I think, you know, the trailer kind of shows that it's very much playing on Charlize Theron's move towards gritty action cinema after Fury Road. As someone coming to this completely cold, I'd say I kind of watched it and had some observations based on having read the comic and knowing the comic a little bit. But what did you feel going into it completely cold?
What I felt was there is nothing more dull to me than the phrase team of mercenaries. Like, this is your premise. You've got immortal beings who have lived throughout history, and the thing they do is pick up some guns and run around shooting stuff. Really?
I think it's that there is that element of, you know, what else can they do? Or, you know, I think part of it is as well, they are all originally soldiers. So that's quite a, each of them is originally a soldier who's fought in a different historical war. So the reason why they're still soldiers is because that's what they do.
And famously, people only ever do one thing forever.
Killing comics.
I think I prefer this film when it was called Highlander.
Fair.
And they use swords instead of guns because swords are cool.
But, you know, as I say, I mean, you know, the comic is, it's Greg Rucka. So there is, you know, there's moral ambiguity and there's character twists. And there's, I think the key thing is that it sets itself as being about them kind of asking the question of, well, what is there beyond this? And sort of, and the effect that, it's that classic thing of the effect, what the effect of being immortal can have on you, particularly when everyone who you've known in your life keeps dying, sort of thing. So... you know, it's, as I say, it's a decent read. It's one that it was kind of initially, I mean, yeah, for similar reasons to you, I think I probably found it initially a bit difficult to get into, because it was like, oh, here's a bunch of soldiers shooting people, and it's not written by Garth Ennis, so like war comics that aren't by Garth Ennis. But, you know, as it goes on, as I say, it's kind of got that intrigue to it and that kind of sure-footedness of a Rucka series. And looking at the trailer looks like it's a very straight adaptation of the first book, you know, with some obvious tweaks to the characters, but certainly what it's about in terms of the people who are after them and that it's about their secret being compromised and stuff. It looks like they're pretty straight as a film doing the first volume. So I think it's, as you know, I'll look forward to doing it when it comes out. I think it's absolutely something that we should cover. And
yeah, I will. I mean, I'll be interested. I'm not sure whether to read the comic or watch the film first, because I have a feeling that the film will be a dumbed down version of the comic.
I don't think anything in the film will surprise you if you've read the comic, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting the vibes from it that like they have taken a reasonably interesting premise and made it a slightly more generic version of itself.
Hmm.
That's the vibe I'm getting off it. But you know, it might be good.
I mean,
it's free to watch, so we'll definitely do it.
The other thing I will say about the comic, and especially given the speed with which it went from new comic series to adaptation, it is one of those comics where the comic reads like a treatment for a film. That's hard to deny. You know, it's a good and well-crafted comic. Fernandez is a great artist, but you read this going, oh yeah, I can see the film that would come out of this, and now we can see the film that will have come out of this. So, yeah. Read a comment I made earlier about Lazarus. Apparently, according to Stephen, Lazarus is apparently developing at Amazon. So that'll be Lazarus is a good series. I didn't read the whole thing, but it's one of those where I remember picking up a bunch of Image like first and second volumes in a Humble Bundle, and I remember quite enjoying that. So some more of that, because as I say, always like a Greg Rucka series. Read your comment about nothing being more boring. John says, what about the Star Wars Episode One scroll about trade negotiations?
I mean, I found that funny. So not necessarily intentionally funny, but funny.
Yeah, the fact that like that's how you're leading.
That's how you're bringing back Star Wars. Okay, sure. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We got one more bit of a little kind of mini roundup of TV related news to go to. So we'll go to that shortly. I'm going to pull back a couple of comments about Bill and Ted. Michael says the last beat of the Bill and Ted trailer was weird. Yeah, I think that
was the only bit that I thought was interesting. I was like, oh, they have got ideas.
I mean, it was, I think you can already see people saying that thing of them, the muscle bound future prison versions, they look a bit silly and over the top, but that kind of screamed out Bogus Journey to me, like Bogus Journey.
Yeah, definitely
over the top. So I'm fine with that.
Remember Station, right?
Exactly. Did you ever hear the story about why Station is like says Station all the time?
No.
And it was because of they wrote a script like a stage direction in the script that said X Station, as in police station, and then that just led to them just going Station all the time, and then it ended up making its way into that.
So okay.
And Jim says, I did the trailer, not as excited as Seb, but more so than James. So you are the cinematic universe centrist, Jim. So. Before I go into these last stories, I will just say if we'll do this quick bit of roundup, and then if anyone has any kind of questions or comments to write, because I have a feeling this last bit will be quite quick, feel free to chuck them in the comments. And if they pop up before we get to the end, then we'll do a quick answer bit.
Questions about anything?
James is rolling his eyes.
I wasn't rolling my eyes.
No, I'm just mindful that I just committed you to spending slightly longer on the episode. So
I'm happy to answer comics questions about anything.
Yeah.
Especially if you have X-Men questions.
I'm going to have a comics question for you in a minute, actually, when we're talking about ins and outs. So this is ins and outs on various TV shows. I mean, to be honest, I don't think we have maybe a huge...
Do we have any ins?
Some of these.
Just have outs, right?
No, there is an inn. There's a very interesting inn, and this is the one that I want to ask you a question about.
Okay.
So the outs are, well, let's deal with the most recent one first, because I don't really have much else to say about it, but it did get mentioned to us in comments by our friend Stephen. So in the interest of covering it, Hartley Sawyer, who plays Ralph Dibny, aka the Elongated Man on The Flash, has been sacked from The Flash for racist and sexist tweets that have been dug up. So well done to him for being a big old asshole and getting himself sacked from playing one of the more interesting characters in DC Comics. I mean, I looked this up because obviously I haven't seen The Flash for a long time, and apparently, like, Ralph Dibny's been a regular character on the show for like two full seasons now. I was like, oh, did they just introduce him like last season? That's quite interesting. I wonder what they did with him, and he's been around for years already. So, but he's not going to be in the next season. Yeah.
And part of me is going, hey, remember when they did this to James Gunn and you didn't agree with it? But I don't know the context of the tweets that were.
The context of the tweets themselves are quite different from the James Gunn tweets. So they are more kind
of. They were not overtly jokes.
I mean, they were him joking, but in a sort of. They're kind of. I think they're worse from. Yeah. They're not. They don't seem to be kind of. I am playing for schlocky shock value kind of thing. They just seem to be more kind of being a dick, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, part of my position is like, if it is worth giving people the chance to change and improve, and not punishing them for stuff that happened in the distant past. But also, racism is kind of. It's not like racism wasn't bad 10 years ago, right?
So yeah.
However long ago that was happening, probably not okay.
Mm. I mean, it was things like, and I think particularly given current sensitivities, it was things like remarks about percentages of criminals being of certain races and that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But another departure and another character that won't be appearing in the Arrowverse again is Kate Kane, Batwoman, because Ruby Rose has departed after one season of Batwoman. It's now being confirmed by showrunner Julie Plec that, is it Plec or Pletch? I'm not sure. But that they're not going to recast. She initially did just want to recast because she'd already been working on writing season two. And my assumption when I saw Ruby Rose was leaving was, oh, they'll just recast. That is a thing that happens. That's not unexpected. But no, they are going to write out Kate Kane, and they're going to introduce a new character called Ryan Wilder, who is not a name that has anything to do with any existing DC character. And she is going to be the new Batwoman. She's actually going to be a new character who will take over as the new Batwoman. So
interesting.
That is kind of, I mean, Batwoman kind of feels, yeah, kind of the weird sort of like nothing's ever really gone right since that started. But, you know, that is a sort of, I find myself, you know, in as much as I'm, you know, not very good at dipping into what's going on with the DC shows, but I'm intrigued to see how that's handled. I'm intrigued to see, you know, are they going to give the character the same costume? Are they going to come up with something completely different? Are they going to go down a classic yellow Kate Kane from the 50s kind of look? Or are they just going to put someone under the mask and wig and you know, it, as Batwoman, are they going to be effectively and functionally the same?
Right. Depends how many t-shirts they can sell out of it. Because that's what's happening here, is they are creating themselves some new IP.
Kate Kane is going to go missing just like that universe's Bruce Wayne. So, yeah. they'll have to do a Bruce Wayne at some point, won't they?
That's... How many Batman TV series, Batman adjacent TV series, have they done where the premise is like Batman is not around for some reason?
Batman is not around. You've got Batwoman, you've got Pennyworth, you've got Gotham, Titan.
The Old Birds of Prey TV series, Titans,
TV series. Yeah. They love a not Batman TV series almost as much as they love a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Do you know what would be good? A live-action Batman TV series.
Right.
You know, we were talking on our Patreon minisode about wanting like a Batman series, or a Batman film rather, where he's more a detective.
Yeah, do a fucking procedural with Batman. Batman writes itself. Future. People love procedurals. They're constantly turning TV shows into procedurals when they shouldn't be. Fucking Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer is a procedural.
Snowpiercer has been turned into
a
procedural. Yeah. They could do that with Snowpiercer, they can do that with Batman.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's as I say, that's kind of unfortunately, I appreciate, and there'll be people listening and watching who are like much more avid CW fans than we are, who will be going, you should know more about this and you should be able to talk more authoritatively about this, for which I can only apologize. But that is an interesting story that's worth remarking on. So we have done so. So there is a possible in. I don't know if this is confirmed or if this is rumored, but Evan Peters is apparently going to be in WandaVision. So for obvious reasons, this has had a lot of people going, huh? Because as you all know, Evan Peters played Quicksilver in the Fox films, while Aaron Taylor Johnson played Quicksilver in the MCU films, and now Evan Peters is going to be in the MCU in a TV show about the character of Scarlet Witch. Hearing this news for the first time, James, is your immediate assumption, oh yeah, he's playing Quicksilver? Or is it, no, of course he's not?
I think, given that they have mentioned in the past that WandaVision is going to tie in some way to Doctor Strange, which is called Multiverse of Madness, let's not forget, and that Marvel or Disney own all the Fox characters, I think there is a strong possibility he is playing like an alternate universe version of Quicksilver. I'm not okay. saying definitely.
Well,
I can see it happening.
The reports are saying that he probably isn't. Now there is a report, and I'm going to bring this up and ask you about it anyway because I want you to talk about the character. Okay. But the report does come from a source who I think is not necessarily the most trustworthy of sources when it comes to these things. Nevertheless, okay. It is being reported by a major YouTuber in this field that he is apparently.
Imagine
going
being on YouTube.
he is rumored to be playing Mephisto. James,
Mephisto.
Tell us about Mephisto.
Do I have to?
Yes, you do.
So he's a stand-in for Satan in the Marvel Universe, of which there are many. He's more of a Ghost Rider villain normally, but he does fit into the magical world. So you can definitely see him clashing with the Scarlet Witch. Was he not revealed as the... I might be half remembering this. I have a feeling that in the original version of the storyline where Scarlet Witch and Vision had children, he turned out to be the reason they were alive.
Oh, right.
Perhaps.
I have, yeah.
He may have been in that storyline in some capacity. I'm not sure if he, like, Bendis retconned it to mean that it was Scarlet Witch's chaos magic that did it.
Yeah, because just looking at this, yeah, definitely he was actually in the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries in the mid 80s, yeah. And then he was back in Avengers West Coast when they were in that in the late 80s.
I think he was associated with that storyline.
Yeah,
but so that's interesting.
But he's probably most well known these days for his part in the most controversial Spider-Man storyline of.
You say best well-known, most well-known. Like, that storyline is, what, 10, 15 years? It must be pretty old now. More than 10 years old now, right?
When was it, Brand? One more day. Was it 2007, 2008?
2008 is what I have it in my head, yeah. So.
I think for a lot of people, Mephisto is the magical retcon machine in Marvel. So, I think that, obviously, again, what you were saying about this, the ties between this and Doctor Strange, it 100% makes sense to have Mephisto in whatever form they do him turn up in something that is both tied to Doctor Strange and about Scarlet Witch. It's like a strong character to bridge that. So I would be tempted to believe that rumor. I like Evan Peters. I think that's interesting. I mean, I don't think you're going to get Mephisto as full on red skin Satan kind of. He's more
he's going to be a bit Netflix,
a bit normal,
is he?
And, yeah, but
it's going to be a guy in a red suit.
Yeah,
it's going to be like
style.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if you're going to do Mephisto, you want to do proper like giant red demon Mephisto,
cape, like shirtless.
I really like his appearance in Guardian Devil, that Daredevil storyline that Kevin Smith wrote.
The Kevin Smith one. Yeah.
Yeah. where
what is he doing that? I don't know.
So Daredevil is trying to figure out if the baby he's been given is actually the second coming of Jesus.
Oh yeah.
And so he takes the kid to Doctor Strange, and Doctor Strange is like, well, no, he doesn't take the kid. He goes to Doctor Strange and says, is this happening? And Doctor Strange says, well, I know who I can check with. And so they summon Mephisto and ask him. And he tells them the truth, which is interesting.
Yeah. Oh, apparently we've already done an explainer on Mephisto, which I don't remember in the slightest. Steven says,
yeah, there was
when he was rumoured to be in The Defenders.
There was a rumour that Alexandra, the character played by Sigourney Weaver, was going to be Mephisto. That turned out to be false.
Yeah.
Mephisto was, in a way, in the first Ghost Rider film, because they had a character called Mephistopheles, who was not the one from Cats. No. I forget who played him, but again, they didn't do the proper Mephisto visuals. He was just a guy in a suit, which is probably what we're going to get this time.
But, you know, it's another potential piece of WandaVision, which to me still, I think, and, you know, and not just for you because of Kat Dennings, but I think is by far the most interesting upcoming piece of MCU that we actually know anything about at the moment, I think.
All of these TV series seem interesting in some way.
No, so. They're all interesting in their way, but I think if I had to put a pin in, like, what is of the things that are actually, like, on, rather than, you know, kind of rumoured future.
I was going to say, She-Hulk's coming, right? So.
Well, She-Hulk is coming, but we know so little about that. We know, of the stuff that we know stuff about, WandaVision is the one where I'm like, you know, at a time, I don't feel particularly I can't wait for about anything in the MCU at the moment. And that's, I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that in a, you know, I'm not like feverishly anticipating.
I can't wait for them to announce some different films.
Oh yeah. But, like, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm happy for stuff to come along when it comes along with MCU at the moment. But that is the one where, when it comes along, I'm going to be most kind of like, okay, what the hell is this going to be all about? So.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's potentially interesting developments. We've got a couple of questions and stuff that have come in, and a couple of things that actually I think are quite interesting to potentially talk about. So, Irkman12 asks, speaking of HBO Max, as we were with Snyder Cut earlier, any thoughts about the Green Lantern series planned for it?
Please procedural in space, you say?
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, but the thing that jumps to my mind immediately, especially if they do actually want to do it as a police procedural in space, Far Sector. I don't know if you've read any of Far Sector yet, James.
No.
I've only read a couple of issues of it after people were raving about it. It's really good. It's very...
Who's the creator?
It throws you in at the deep end. So it is... the creator is... And I forget the name, so I'm looking it up. It's somebody who is, I think, not from a... comics background. She's a sci-fi author. I don't want to pronounce this wrongly, but N.K. Jimizin. Someone feel free to correct me on my pronunciation. But yeah, she's a sci-fi author, and I think it's her first comic, or at least her first major comic. But it is basically it's about an entirely new Green Lantern off in a far sector, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's very much, it's about kind of throwing a character into an unfamiliar kind of alien environment and kind of how she deals with that.
Good.
I mean, it is the kind of thing that, again, kind of feels primed to be a TV show. Maybe not a cheap TV show because it's completely on an alien planet. On the other hand, it's not about a Green Lantern kind of, you know, it's not like the Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp Green Lantern series that is so huge and about going to so many different places. It's about her being a cop on this alien planet. I mean, actually, yeah, there you go. There's my comment. Thoughts on the HBO Max Green Lantern series. Maybe don't do a cop show right now. you know, and that is the interesting thing with Green Lantern. I think any Green Lantern thing that anyone does at the moment has to potentially tread quite carefully in how much it goes space cop as opposed to other things.
Superhero,
yeah. I kind of feel like, I mean, I know there's only really been that one major attempt, but I think Green Lantern feels fundamentally like something that's never going to stand a chance of actually making it over successfully.
I think it's a really strong concept. I think the thing that gets in the way of Green Lantern working is budget.
Well, no, but that's the, as, no. I mean, yeah, I don't mean it's a concept that can't be done. I think it's a concept that DC and Warner's will never get round to successfully doing.
I think they'll do it.
Yeah, Andy says, you know, the Morrison Justice League is very much. I don't know if this was in response to the Batman comment or individual issues where it's a sort of, yeah, it's, you know, he is kind of, oh, well, probably when you said before about Cop Show in Space, Morrison said he was going into it treating it like seasons and episodes of a Cop Show. Although towards the end of that run, it did end up getting into a longer form storyline about the Black Stars that then fed into the second season that's going on now. But you know, he very much wanted to treat it as an episode by episode Cop Show, which I think is the way to do Green Lantern. But if you're going to do Green Lantern now, I definitely don't want to see Hal Jordan. I don't want to see Kyle Rayner. Look, if you want to do John Stewart, it's fine. I can fully get behind the reasons why people would want to see John Stewart and the affection and the feeling that a lot of people have for that character. I'd rather see them just lift Far Sector and do that, because that's immediately more.
I mean, the thing about Green Lantern, right, is you can give the powers and the name to basically anyone.
Yeah.
So why not do that?
Especially if Geoff Johns is executive producer on it, they'll just do Hal Jordan. You know they will. That's just what they'll do. I mean, Grant Morrison has managed to make Hal Jordan mildly interesting in his series only by leaning into Hal Jordan is an arrogant dick. Like, that's the premise of the Morrison and Sharp series, and it's worked quite well. But otherwise, yeah, no interest in Hal Jordan. But there are interesting Green Lanterns who they could potentially do. Couple of the other questions. Louis asks, when are we planning an episode for the recent Hellboy film? I should probably watch it in case it drops off Netflix. Oh, don't shame us. Don't shame us into doing that.
In fairness, right, the reason we haven't done it is because we need someone familiar with the comics, and that means we need Mike Leader, and Mike is an extremely busy man who has a young child.
Yeah.
So like, we promise to do it when Mike is free.
I mean, it's not like there aren't other people who know Hellboy, but I feel like, you know, like it's completing the set. We have to get Mike to do that Hellboy film. I don't even know if he's watched it, but if he hasn't, we have to force him to watch it. If we've got to sit through it, he's got to sit through it as well. So, this is let's try and not spend too long on this, but you wanted a comics question. Michael asks us thoughts on the DC distribution stuff. So I'm going to attempt to summarize this as concisely as I can for those who don't know what this means. But basically, for the last, I don't know, however many years, basically, certainly since comics stopped kind of going out to newsstands, comics distribution, the distribution of comics to comic shops in the US and elsewhere, has been handled exclusively by an organization called Diamond. So Diamond are the company who get all the comics off everybody, Marvel, DC, Image, Boom, Dark Horse, everybody who publishes, you know, kind of major American comics. And Diamond are the people who comic shops order from, and Diamond distributes the comic shops. It has been a monopoly for, I don't even know how many years, kind of.
Decades. We're talking decades.
At least 30, well, at least 20, possibly 30 years.
Marvel tried to do it themselves for a bit.
That was before the bankruptcy, wasn't it? Did they try to
Heroes World, maybe?
Yeah. It's been 20 years, I think.
Minimum 20 years, yeah.
Where the only way to get comics has been via Diamond. Diamond themselves were actually more so than I think Marvel and DC were the main reason why comics kind of went on pause during the crisis, because comic shops kind of had to kind of close their doors and stuff, and they kind of basically it was Diamond who effectively put a halt on distribution. So during this time, DC found some alternate methods of getting comics out, which was to partner up with a couple of major comic shops in the US and get those comic shops to basically use their own distribution network to distribute comics. And they did this, I think they've done this for a couple of weeks or a few weeks before kind of Diamond resumed. And now, I think later this year it is. I'm hazy on the details because this wasn't a prepared question. This is based on what I've read about it before. But DC's deal with Diamond was due to be renewed anyway, and DC have now said they're not renewing it, and they are going to be using these distribution partners for the distribution. Well,
so part of the issue is that comic shops pay Diamond and Diamond pay the publishers.
Yeah.
But also because of the coronavirus like shutdown, Diamond said to comics companies, like, we're not going to pay off our debts at the rate we previously agreed.
Yeah.
We're going to be giving you less money. And Warner being given something like 10% of what they were owed just went, well, fuck you guys then. Like, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah.
So in a way, Diamond like sort of screwed up on this because they thought they could strong arm their position in the industry, and it failed.
And it's failed. So they.
I think it's probably good to get rid of a monopoly, but in an already fragile comics industry, it is extremely.
I think that's
concerning.
There is not going to, you know, DC will look at other distribution methods and are using other distribution methods, but there is not going to be another Diamond. There will not be another company, especially in the current environment, that sets itself up with the network and infrastructure that Diamond has. And as UK fans, one of the biggest issues is Diamond has a distribution hub in the UK. I think Rich Johnson was talking about it and said, it's like next to Heathrow or something. Like, they actually have a distribution hub. So comics come into the UK and immediately get distributed. And, you know, it's as recently as kind of the 80s, comics didn't have a proper distribution network in the UK. It was like you'd get what you were given kind of thing. You might find them in a newsagent's, find them in a local shop or whatever. Finally, you know, we started to get a network of comic shops and there started to be proper distribution. I think, you know, there is looking like a very real possibility that UK comic shops will either not get DC comics at all or get them at extremely expensive prices, because the shipping will be so expensive, because they will be having to have individual shipments made by US distributors. So it won't be the case that it's all getting shipped in bulk to the UK and then distributed.
Yeah, and that it could mean
for the already expensive monthly comics.
It could mean your DC comics come in a week later than the others. It might just be that Diamond UK keeps doing DC comics separate to the rest of Diamond. Who knows?
I mean, that would make sense. You know, I'd like to see that. But I would. Basically, one of two things could happen here. Either things will kind of go along pretty much as they have before, but with DC using distribution, you might find that the patterns of distribution and even the prices, you know, again, the sort of the cost of a DC comic versus the cost of a Marvel comic might become less standardized than it currently is. And that in both the UK and in the US. Or it could be the case, and bearing in mind that there's a lot of chat around the idea that Warners don't see comics as a particular, like monthly comics as a particularly useful revenue stream and marketing stream, the way that I think Marvel do. You know, DC get hammered more in the sales charts, but do much better in graphic novels. I think there is a real possibility that monthly comics, as we know them from DC, might become less and less of a thing. We might see much more stuff pushed to digital first. Like, I don't think they won't stop putting the material out, but the material might go digitally much more and then get collected in books. We might find that the floppy single issue step, they'll probably still get produced, but probably in much smaller numbers, and they'll be a reality for fewer of us. That could be the possibility. And then whether someone like Marvel follows suit, or if Marvel are still finding that it's a useful and profitable thing for them. But I think we've all been thinking for quite a while that monthly single issue comics as they stand are just not a sustainable model. They're getting more and more expensive and they're getting less and less value for money compared to other things. And I know that I only tend to buy I've started buying print issues a lot more in the last couple of years because I work around the corner from a comic shop and it's nice to go in and pick things up. And so there's some things where like new series have launched and I go, instead of buying that digitally, I'm going to buy it in print to support the shop. And other things, I've picked up random issues because I like the cover, because it's like I want to put them in the rack there and, you know, I like kind of having them to look at. But like, if that went away, I'd feel sad for the comic shop. I'd want to be spending money in the comic shop, but it might be that I spend more on trade paperbacks instead because they're better value. But that weekly thing of, you know, I'm not going in and buying any Marvel comics weekly from the shop at the moment. That really might go away for me as a thing if it does go away for DC.
Yeah, I mean, I've been digital for a long, pretty much digital only for a long, long time.
And I don't think that model will change. I mean, in the UK, we've also had price. That's the irony with this is we've had a massive pricing issue with Comixology recently, where Comixology prices have gone up for.
It has rolled back now.
Has it rolled back completely?
Yeah, yeah. Well, almost completely. I think they're maybe 10p more expensive than they used to be, but for a while they were like a quid more expensive. Yeah,
I've been getting stuff in print from the shop. I haven't bought any new comics for a couple.
They took the VAT off digital books in the UK. Well, that was
if we're being forced to digital and digital has gone more expensive than print. That was but yeah, no, I think that I don't think that digital model will change, but I think you might find more things released as like shorter 99-cent digital installments and that kind of thing. I think, you know, I don't think Comixology is going anywhere anytime soon. And I don't think Marvel and DC are going to stop producing material for it. But I also think with DC, when you tie this to, and again, without spending ages going into it, but DC were reportedly supposed to have a big overhaul of their line and their continuity and their stories and their universe called 5G. And that now looks to be being almost entirely, if not entirely, walked back on in the wake of slash linked to the departure of Dan DiDio as editor-in-chief. And if DC aren't planning any kind of major stuff in their line but are just planning to poodle along with what they're already doing, then it does become a question of, well, where are DC going? What are they doing? You know, you've been doing Superman and Batman for 80 years. What are you actually going to do that's new and different? Or are you just going to keep turning out the same old stuff for the same 40, 50, 60 year old readers? I do feel like there are kind of bigger existential questions about where are superhero comics going? And it's partly in a practical and distribution sense and partly in a story sense, because now, again, I am at a point where there can be creators that I like on series that I potentially, or, you know, series that potentially I look of or characters that I like, but I'm a bit less inclined to kind of go all in on the, yeah, I'm going to buy this every month and follow this like a soap opera, you know, because it's an expensive hobby.
Yep. So what we've got from this is comics, nothing could change or everything could change.
Basically, that is our spectacular insight, is this could be seismic or it could be a blip. So, yeah, you know, I don't think superhero comics and superhero stories are going away, but, you know, I do think, and, you know, again, Mike comments that Warner have just signed a deal with Random House for graphic novel distribution. Like, there's no danger, I think, of DC not putting books out into bookshops.
No, you know, absolutely not.
Still selling a bajillion copies of Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns every year, you know. But, yeah, is that model of 30-odd superhero titles coming out a month actually going to sustain or not? We don't know. Will we have anything to talk about in a year?
For basically the entire time I've been reading comics, people have been going, single issues will be going away soon. So,
yeah,
I myself have predicted that single issues would disappear within 5 years, probably every couple of years for the last 2 decades. So, who knows?
Do you still remember what it was like when there was that sudden day in 2011 when DC suddenly went day and date digital, and it was like almost entirely out of the blue with the new 52 stuff where they went day and date digital, and we were like, what does this mean? Digital comics. And then look where we are now, Comixology. I mean, then again, I still remember the days when digital comics was on Marvel's.comics website. And it was how I read the first few issues of Ultimate Spider-Man before I was able to start picking them up in print. And it was this clickable, like, panel by panel thing in a web browser. And it was
Marvel.comics.
In like 2000, 2001. I used to read them in school on my lunch break. Like, now that was the future. 20 years later, here we are. And well, okay, so it feels like 20 years later because I realised, you know, we have been on for an hour and 10 minutes now. So, yeah, thank you for everyone who stuck with us and watched and listened. Thanks to everyone who sent in comments and particularly questions. Always good to get a bit of comics chat, especially now that most of our comics chat is confined to the Patreon bonus mini episodes. If you haven't subscribed and listened yet, you can hear us talking about Batman on Patreon to tie into our Batman and Robin episode. If you haven't heard our Batman and Robin episode, I don't know why you wouldn't have, but go and give it a listen because it's really good. I think you know, one of our best episodes for a while. So we'll be back with a main episode of the show in the next kind of week or two. Depends when we record it and then edit it.
Depends when we edit it.
Yeah. the editing does take longer than planning the recording these days, but we'll get it out. So thanks everybody, and I'm sure we'll do another one of these as well in about a month or so, because they work quite well.
When there's news,
evidently like them. When there's news, there will be news. New Mutants, there's going to be a New Mutants update the second we come off YouTube. I'm going to press this button now, and then there will be New Mutants news. You heard it here first.
Yeah, there will.
Yes, thanks once again everybody for watching, listening, whatever. We'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.